been walking in his dreams, haunted by the fear of the life he had lived in a world he had never seen. At times she would take him by his lonely hand, and she would lead him through the night. And just when it thinks he may understand, she fades into the light in ghost stories. In ghost stories. Sometimes when the sun comes up, he would step into the day, a shadow of a man in the life he had lived in a world swept far away. He had everything that a man could want. He'd been blessed with a life of gold, but no one really knows if the spirit dies when a man loses his soul in ghost stories. In ghost stories. In
story. Jeff Hertzman, what was that song we just heard?
That was called Ghost Stories, and that is from Mr. Rob Fahey, who is a local and national musician that resides in Maryland. And if that voice sounds familiar, go watch Fast Times at Ridgemont High, because he wrote the end song, which is Raised on Radio. So if you listen to that soundtrack, you'll definitely hear Rob and the band The Ravens on that track. And that's actually from an album he wrote back in 2007 called Trust Me, I Do This All the Time. And you can check more of his music out at robfahey.com. That's robfahey.com. And Rob is an amazing musician, and thank him very much for letting us use that this week.
Huge fan of the show, that Rob Fahey.
Yes, Rob is a fan of the show. Sure, I'll say that. He can kill me later.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. That's
great
cool.
Tune. And, great tune.
And yeah, and we've got this tune lined up for this week, which is ostensibly, kind of, sort of, a ghost show.
Yes.
Ghosts, shadow people, kids with weird eyes, George Bush, I don't know. That part I made up.
Wow.
No politics in this one.
Right, that's good.
But we do have Jason Offit. Yes, that's right, everybody. Jason Offit of Myth and Lore back to talk about, well, some other aspects of his research that perhaps he wasn't prepared to talk about.
That's right. Perhaps not.
You can learn more about him at his website, which is from-the-shadows.blogspot.com. Ugh, that really is an awful website. From-the-shadows.blogspot.com. And he's the one who told me it's terrible. You'll hear that in the end. So I'm not speaking out of turn on this one.
That's right.
But if that's too lengthy to remember, you can always just remember his name, which is Jason Offit. Offit is O-F-F-U-T-T. And he is here to book learn us about the book learning. Right?
Yay.
Anything we need to say before we get rolling here? Oh, Jason Morehouse is sitting in. Your friend, Jason, and mine. Jason,
yes.
Morehouse.
Go ahead. Hello, yes. Hello, there he
hello
is.
Hello from the deep background. And he doesn't pop up during the interview at all, but he will during the after chat. So if you hear a voice, remember that that's Jason Morehouse.
That's right. That's right.
What else? I guess maybe one more thing. Let's just plug this Sunday. We're returning with another episode of Paratopia Live at 9 p.m. Paratopia Live, our second installment of the on-running show. I thought last week's went swimmingly, in spite of, you know, the technical glitches.
Oh, yeah, and being ill-prepared and all that. Yeah.
Well,
for having no topic is a hell of a show.
Yes. Yes.
This week, just so everyone knows, the banner will be directly linked to the page where you can listen. I won't put it directly to the page at the network. It'll be going straightly to the listenable page. And so
Straightly.
That's right.
Awesome.
Straightly to that page, and you will be able to hear it forthwith, that page.
But what's interesting is I had sort of made a joke last week about doing radio noises on that show, but you actually have radio noises.
That's correct, yes.
Could you give us an example of that right now?
Can I give you... Oh, sure.
It's not going to be all wrong. It's the wrong tone. You do it again, I'll stab you in the face with a soldering iron.
Yeah, there's that, you know...
It's all Christopher Walken. It's great.
Stale French fries.
That's right.
Guess what? I got a fever, and the only prescription is for cowbell.
That's right. And
so, yes.
Well, there's not just that. I mean, there's plenty of other things. and my personal favorite.
Right. I believe you already used that one on me last week, so thank
right.
you. Thank you for that. Wow. God, kill it. All right. So look forward to that. Jesus. All right. All yeah. right. Well, and yet it's still going to be a paranormal show, right?
I mean, that's right.
Oh, awesome.
We talk about serious things on this program.
And feel free to call in. There is a call-in number. We'll give it to you at the end of this episode as well. But come out Sunday at 9 p.m. at ParaQuestRadioNetwork.com. Talk to us. Listen to us. Mainly talk to us.
Yeah. Yeah. Should be a lot of questions this week, or a lot of comments at least. We got a nice hot-button topic.
That's right. Which is... Oh, that's right. Well, you say it at the end of the show, right?
That's right.
So you'll have to wait till the end of the show to figure out what that is. Or tune in live Sunday, 9 p.m., ParaQuestRadioNetwork.com. In the meantime, here is our outing with one Jason Offutt. Can't get enough sound effects, huh?
That's right.
If you record audio for any purpose, chances are you want it to be heard. You want to attract the largest audience possible who can hear your message. That's where we come in. We're CyberEars.com, a revolutionary internet service that will host your audio files and help you promote and track its popularity. Considering hosting a podcast to the world? We have all the automated tools to make the process as simple and easy as it can be. No technical mumbo-jumbo to work out. CyberEars.com does all the work for you. You record it, we take care of the rest. So don't delay. Go to CyberEars.com today and register for a free trial account. Upload your audio files and get heard. With CyberEars.com, it's your audio. On your terms.
Urgency is thrilling and ardently intelligent and graceful work. Mitch Horowitz, author of Occult America, The Secret History of How Mysticism
Brilliant.
Shaped Our Nation.
The
ending was powerful and smack on. Colin Andrews, internationally acclaimed author / human consciousness researcher.
Jeremy writes a mean book filled with subtle humor and flashes of deep insight into who we are and what we're really capable of.
A must read for any serious truth seeker. Deb Cobble, author of Abducted,
completely blows everything you think is true out of the water. I urge you to get this book because it's got a lot of power. It is a deeply interesting and deeply funny book.
Whitley Strieber, author of The Key and Communion.
Urgency by Jeremy Vaney. It might be the most important book you read all year.
It will be the most fascinating. In stores and paperback on the Kindle and on the Nook, now available.
Paratopia, without further ado, please welcome Mr. Jason Offutt. Jason, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much for having me back. I always love to be invited back, which means I really didn't screw up too much the first time.
Well, no, not only did you not screw up, but we just yesterday had a message on the message board saying, could you please get Jason Offutt back? And I thought, I wonder if we can.
Well, that's awesome. And normally I think it was my mom, but she died 4 years ago. So somebody might actually read my stuff. That's awesome.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, I was going through your stuff because I know when last we had you on, I think we talked about the paranormal in your backyard. What lurks beyond the paranormal in your backyard? But I don't know that we've ever talked about, and maybe we did, but maybe we can get into some details here differently. In Haunted Missouri, a ghostly guide to the Show Me State's most spirited spots. Because you talk about things like cold spots and phantom voices and things like this. And I'm just wondering, you know, you've talked about shadow people. You've talked about ghosts. You've talked about all this stuff. Have you had time to step back and look at all these little details of hauntings and details of shadow people and see what connects and what doesn't?
I've done a lot of thought about that. A bit of it frustrating. some of it that would really piss off ghost hunters. I've done a number of pissed off a number of people who hunt ghosts over my opinions. But I've done some really serious thoughts about it, and I think there are way too many explanations out there for the phenomena. It's not, you know, when you say ghosts, shadow people, any other type of paranormal entity, it's not just one thing. I don't think people who see, experience extraterrestrials, I don't really think it's just one thing. You know, ghosts is not just one thing. Shadow people, not just one thing. They might have a lot of you know, a lot of similarities, but, you know, I don't think ghosts are just these spirits of dead people. I'm putting quote marks up with my fingers. I have no idea why.
Yeah, this is just an audio show, just so you know. So when you say that there's too many definitions, I guess I thought you were going to say that there's maybe one source for all of these things, but it doesn't sound like you're saying that. What are you saying?
Well, I'm saying that nobody – I don't know. I have no idea. There could be one source for all this. I mean, if you want to go the extreme Christian route, there's absolutely one explanation for this. You know, demons are the cause of everything. I've heard that more than once. I'm just saying with ghosts, I don't think ghosts are just one type of entity. Are they the spirits of the dearly departed? Are they you know, something evil? Are they something we can't explain? Most probably that's the case.
So when you see ghost hunters and they say, well, as Jeff likes to lampoon, we're here to help, which is impossible, and then they sort of walk you through, yeah, you got this haunting, but it's no big deal. Are they actually doing a disservice to people by sort of just passing off, well, yeah, you've got this haunting and it's no big deal, because we don't know what it is? Ultimately, and so it could actually be a big deal?
Yes, absolutely. They're doing not just a disservice. They're doing absolutely nothing. Nothing positive at all. Anybody, any of the weekend ghost hunters out there, any of the ones on TV, they have no idea what they're doing. Absolutely not. What is a ghost? I mean, who can say? I mean, all the people wandering around with their EMF meters, you know, getting a reading, you know, not knowing that the airport 10 miles away is making it go beep. You know, they're doing absolutely nothing. And if they are claiming to people that they have banished their house of a ghost, no, they haven't. You know, whatever was there, they might have. I'm not saying there's not something there. I'm saying there probably is something there, but they may have made it mad, or you know, just don't understand the nature of it.
So, okay. So, in your research, then, when you look at things like cold spots or disembodied voices or poltergeist activity, any of these little bits and pieces here and there, you don't think that they add up to a pattern of a haunting? You think that they're their own separate things that need to be sort of, I guess, studied, if that's possible, as separate items?
Well, it depends what you mean by separate items. If there are a lot of different paranormal activity type things happening in one location, I don't think it's a bunch of different separate things. It's probably one thing causing it. But I'm just saying, if somebody sees a ghost, you know, if they see a full-bodied apparition, we don't know what it is. It could be a ghost. It could be, you know, something interdimensional. It could be a myriad of different things. It could be a djinn paying a visit to us. We just don't know what it is.
Do you think that any of them, or all of them, or just some of them are sort of intricately linked to us in some sort of almost physical manifestation of something we're projecting?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of cases where that's true. As I mentioned, the jinn, according to Islamic tradition, there's a jinn attached to all of us, whether we're Muslim or not, sitting there watching us, influencing us throughout our lives. Ghosts have been reported, you know, to be attached to people. You know, again, no matter what they are they, you know, somebody. Is my dad? If I were to see my dad standing in the room, and I would see that, you know, every few months for the next 10 years. I mean, would that be attached to me? Is that my dad? You know, there are just a whole lot of cases of things that do follow us. People, shadow people have been known to follow people all over the world. So yes, if you're experiencing to the listener, if you're experiencing something very scary and paranormal, don't get comfortable.
Well, tell me about the djinn. Is there a difference between that and just sort of a, whatchamacallit, like a guardian angel? Is that sort of the Islamic version of a guardian angel, or is that a different definition?
Well, no, there's a spiritual, guardian angels are supposedly attached to everyone. A jinn is also attached to everyone. Jinns take on a lot of different appearances. Some of them you never see. Some of them appear human and actually carry on human lives and marry human women or human men. They are supposedly attached to people. They're spiritual beings that were created by out of fire by Allah, and they control what we do. And if you're Islamic and you have an Islamic jinn, you're cool. Everything's fine. You're going to get the, you know, all the virgins in heaven and whatever. But if you're not Islamic and the jinn is, it's going to sit on your gravestone and torture you for the rest of your non-existence after you die. A lot of people I've interviewed who have studied Islam to some great extent have said that jinn are an important part of Islam that a lot of the Western world doesn't know, and you need to watch what you do because they will talk in your ear and have you do things that you probably shouldn't.
Well, that sounds suspiciously like an amalgamation of a spirit guide and, you know, the devil on your shoulder. I mean, it sounds
right,
like if I were to just take sort of a psychosocial step back and look at this, it looks like, and it sounds like, you know, hybrid alien theory. I mean, you've got these sort of almost human, maybe physical, maybe not controlling entities causing havoc in our lives. What is it? I mean, if none of that's true, if these are just faces of a thing, of a story that we come up with, you have any idea why we keep coming up with the same story?
Well, I don't think it's us coming up with the same story. I think it's the same story happening over and over again. There's something there. It's not just different aspects of humanity coming up with the same story. It's what I've said about ghosts and UFOs and Bigfoot for years. It's that every society, every culture on the planet over, you know, every historical, century that we've recorded has had all these things as part of their belief system. They've had ghosts. They've had Bigfoot. They've, you know, had spiritual encounters from beings from the sky writing on flying scrolls. So I don't think it's society coming up with the same story. It's the same story from the same entities coming up over and over again.
Here's another sort of step back question in a different way. When you first started looking into all of this stuff, where were you compared to now in your thinking?
When I first started, I was there are ghosts, there are cryptozoological creatures, there's UFOs piloted by creatures from a different star system. That's where I was. You know, if you're going to name one thing, there's one thing, and now it could all fit under the same category.
Huh. So you were sort of nuts and bolts before, and now in studying it, you're not.
Well, no, I won't say that. I'm still kind of nuts and bolts, but I'm saying the entities involved might fit in with all the other types of entities involved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even going back to elves, trolls, goblins, gnomes. I just wrote a story on my blog recently about, actually I just posted it last week, about a gnome that was terrorizing a family in California. Really, pointed hat, 3 foot tall, suspenders. Gnome? Yeah, this scared the hell out of these people. What is it? It could be connected to all this stuff.
By the way, do you have a poltergeist in your room right now?
That would be my very squeaky old chair. Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. I'm sure somebody will inevitably point it out and wonder if there was some sort of paranormal phenomena going on during the interview that we didn't catch.
Just leave it. Yeah, there is. Don't shit at me right now.
So here's another almost unrelated question. Shadow people, do they ever speak? I guess is question number one. Do they ever communicate?
Rarely. I've interviewed 300-400 people about their shadow people encounters over the years, and rarely does a shadow person speak. I mean, I may have had 3 or 4 occurrences. Shadow people usually don't even touch people. Again, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 occurrences where a shadow person has physically touched somebody else. Usually, the only communication is with a shadow person noticing somebody who notices them, and they're shocked, and they run out of the room because, you know, they've been seen, they've been spotted, and they run away. But when they have communicated, it's been terrifying. One case, a guy named Mick out of Toronto had a shadow person in his room, and it was telling him that it was his his brother's spirit who wanted to eat him.
Hmm. Yeah, well, that's weird. I mean, I was just wondering because I know, you know, we make these correlations between, well, as you were saying, gnomes and fairy folklore and this sort of thing with alien abductions and that sort of thing. We make all these sort of cross-pollinations, but then you come to shadow people and it's like, well, but they're not, where do they fit into that? They don't seem to be of the same thread in terms of they're not taking people, they're not communicating in any way. What are they doing? They're just sort of there.
Well, the shadow people tend to, again, this is from all the people I've interviewed, the ones who have the most interaction with people, sort of a feeding thing. People wake up in the middle of the night and look up, and there's a, you know, 7-foot-tall, dark-of-the-night shadow figure with glowing red eyes leaning over their bed. And, you know, they can't scream, and they are just so terrified, and they feel that the thing is eating something off of them, you know, from their emotion. You know, so I would consider that some kind of communication. And yes, that does sound a lot like the hypnagogic state, which a lot of these probably are. But some of these cases are when people, you know, haven't necessarily gone to sleep. So, I mean, communication is not just verbal. It's not just mental, but terror, I think, has something, you know, it can be considered some type of communication.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I mean, in terms of sleep paralysis and that sort of thing, skeptics sort of use that as a blanket, you know, well, it's sleep paralysis. Have you looked into sleep paralysis, and does it actually explain anything, or does it just put another term on top of something that's mysterious?
No, I've interviewed a number of psychiatrists and psychologists about sleep paralysis, and I wrote a book in 2009 called Darkness Walks, The Shadow People Among Us, and most of the cases that were involved, and like what I explained, you know, somebody wakes up and there's something above them. A lot of those cases, you know, I chalked off as sleep paralysis, and I didn't even include it in the book. So, I mean, that is a lot of cases. If somebody is asleep and wakes up, and there's something weird happening, what has happened is while they were asleep, they were in a dream state, and when they woke up, they're still in the dream state. And their body is basically paralyzed because when you go to sleep, you are your mind floods your body with something that keeps you from shaking all night, keeps your muscles from moving, so you can't move when you wake up, and you can see things from your dream state and from your awake state, and lots of strange shit happens. A lot of paranormal activity, if you just wake up, can be explained by that. So I don't have a problem with psychologists saying that at all. But there are a whole lot of cases that I've talked to people who haven't gone to sleep yet, or who were laying there and have been asleep for an hour, or hell, things that happened during the day.
any sort of qualitative difference between those accounts and the ones that you would dub sleep paralysis?
Not a lot.
Huh. So what do you make of that?
Well, I don't know. I'm stumbling here. No, they all sound the same. I mean, but how, I mean, I don't really know exactly how to account for that, because things that have happened to people who just wake up sound very similar to people who have experienced something, you know, while they're completely awake.
Hmm.
So, I mean, is it a hypnagogic state? I mean, is it sleep paralysis, or, you know, is that just a term that psychologists have given to, you know, the old hag syndrome?
Well, that, I guess that's sort of what I'm getting at. Old hag syndrome and sleep paralysis, does that answer anything? Especially now, if you're saying that there's no real qualitative difference between those and an actual experience, then is just saying, well, something sleep paralysis. I mean, do we know what sleep paralysis is? We know, like you said, it's something that keeps you paralyzed, so you're not moving around, and you're still sort of, I guess, hallucinating from a dream state. But are you also opened up? Maybe this has to do with DMT in the brain, you know, a DMT dump in the brain or something. But are you opened up to other, for lack of a better term, frequencies or other things in the environment in that state that goes unaccounted for when you just slap the term sleep paralysis there?
See, and that's something that, I mean, if anybody says they know, they're full of crap, because, I mean, we don't know. I mean, it very well could be. It's a lot like talking about children who see ghosts and experience all sorts of paranormal activity that people around them, older people, don't, you know, or younger people more attuned to it. I mean, we don't know. I mean, it's the same type of thing. And it's the, you know, seeing the white light when you're on your deathbed, you know, you see a white light, you know, you feel compelled, you know, you see Jesus and your mom and your dad and your great aunt, you know, Doris saying, hey, come to the light, it's great here. And then you wake up and, you know, you've been revived and everything's fine. Well, so many people have reported that. I mean, did that happen? Or is it just some chemical state in the brain? I mean, we don't know about any of this.
Would you say that?
I mean, we're all speculating here, Jeremy.
Oh, you don't have to tell me. I've been speculating here for years. But in your speculations and in your studies, has it made you more, less, or neutrally spiritual?
More. It's made me more spiritual. I mean, especially, I mean, okay, ghosts. What the hell? Really? Seriously? Something that looks a lot like, you know, it looks like my you know, dead uncle is walking around the room. Okay, that hasn't happened, but if it would happen, you know, what would I think? You know, what else could it be? And this has happened, again, as I said, in cultures all over the planet for as long as anybody knows. You know, oral traditions that had a lot of ancestor worship. They saw their ancestors, you know, and natives talked to their ancestors. There's got to be something to it.
Does it make you...
Also, my dead mom talked to my wife.
Oh, well, that'll be my natural next question. But first, does it make you more fearful in any way? Because with the light comes the dark, and we all know, you know, shadow people are sucking on your soul, right? Sucking on the soul teat. So does believing that make you more fearful, or do you not care?
No, well, yeah, everybody with any sort of sense in their head, I think, is afraid of death. That's hit me. I had woke up with a dream that scared the hell out of me this morning about impending death. But no, I mean, it really doesn't worry me that much. You know, shadow people, you know, whatever demonic entities might be out there, really, I mean, it doesn't really bother me.
What was the dream?
Oh, you know, that's one of those that I don't really remember. I just woke up and I'm thinking, oh shit, I'm going to die in 5 minutes.
Huh.
Didn't happen.
Okay, thank God.
Yeah, this interview would not be happening right now.
Well, you don't know that. This is Paratopia. and frankly, it didn't stop your mother, apparently. So what happened there?
Well, my mom... was a really down-to-earth type woman, church every Sunday. She knew, you know, well, I was a weird kid, and she knew this stuff I was interested in, you know, Bigfoot, Loch Ness Monster, ghosts, UFOs, things like that. And she'd talk to me about all that stuff as I was growing up, and she would always tell me that she knew that there's got to be something out there, you know, ghosts, absolutely. You know, it's got to be an afterlife. And she was dying of lung cancer, which I brought up to mutual friend Tim Banal, you know, quit the goddamn smoking. But, yeah, she was dying of lung cancer. She was in hospice. And, like, it was a day or two away from her about ready to die. And she goes, Jason, you know, I'm going to be fine. And I said, Mom, I know that. Just don't come back and tell me because that'll scare the hell out of me. So she promises she wouldn't come back. And a couple days later, I was down in my basement office writing. And from the other room, I heard my wife yell. And I went in the other room and saw my wife, and she was standing over a box that she was unpacking. I said, honey, what's wrong? And she goes, your mother just said Kim in my ear. And I just told her I was too busy to talk.
Why?
Well, my mom had been dead for like a month and a half. And my
Wouldn't you want to know what she has to say?
Well, I wasn't in the room.
Get your wife on the phone.
And my wife didn't. She was a little bit upset. I was like, hey, boom. My mother said my wife's name in her ear, and my wife was like, yeah, okay, that's I'm done with that.
Wow. Has she heard dead people before?
No. Uh-uh.
Huh.
That was it, and my mom made good on her promise. She did not talk to me.
Wow, very interesting. I'm going to hand it over to Jeff in a second, but I just wanted to ask, before, when we started off this conversation, am I reading your tone right, that you're sort of disenchanted with the ghost scene at this point?
Well, yes, to some extent, to the ghost hunter scene.
Because we just had on Rachel Baker, who is part of MRIPA, Midwestern, research, whatever that stands for. Midwestern blah, blah, blah research organization. But, you know, she's someone who they've just done a little internet movie, and they've, you know, they're doing all these sort of upwardly mobile things for as far as ghost hunting and that sort of thing goes. And yet she sounded so completely over it that it was shocking. You know, just had nothing really good to say about ghost hunters and about the way the phenomenon is being researched at this point. So I find it interesting that, you know, here we go again. I mean, maybe this is a theme in the ghost hunting world. Maybe the people who really do the research, I guess, what, are at odds with sort of the popularity and the public assumption that anyone can do it? Would that be fair to say?
Well, it's not really at odds. It's just that we know they're full of shit.
Yeah. Well, there's that.
I mean, okay, I teach at a university, and a couple of my buddies here are...
can you fax over your credentials, by the way? Because I don't think we can put that on the air if...
Do what?
Never mind. It's a Phil Imbrogno joke. Go on!
Oh, sorry. Okay. Ba-doom-tsh. Yeah, I got that now. how many other big names... who've claimed, you know, their credentials, who don't have them. God, I'm trying to think of another guy. Is Phil Imbrogno the guy who said that he was a PhD, from MIT?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the dude? Okay. Anyway, yeah, I'm not a PhD. I just have my master's degree, and I teach journalism, which is not a science. But I have a couple of friends who are the physics scientists, and they hunt ghosts. And you know, they cuss all the time about all these ghost hunters who are out there on Saturday afternoons, Saturday nights, with all sorts of electronic equipment they don't know what the fuck they're doing with, you know, trying to find ghosts. So, yeah, I'm a little bit frustrated.
Jeff?
I'm not frustrated with ghosts. It's the ghost hunters.
Well, I'm frustrated with both.
The ghosts will be happy to hear that.
I think we could chalk up the frustration and discuss with the whole ghost subject in two small areas. That would be a paranormal state and ghost adventures. Thank you.
Ghost Adventures is really fun to watch and do a Mystery Science Theater 3000 during.
Yes,
that is awesome.
Mute it and have fun. Yes.
Yeah.
Jason, I'm curious, when you have talked to all these different people who've experienced ghosts or shadow people or even the black-eyed kids stuff, do you notice a similarity in the people, the personalities, the education level, anything like that?
No, it's just completely diverse. Age, education level, profession, geography. It's not one type of person or three types of people. It's massively diverse. So yeah, I really can't pin, you know, one type of person who, you know, who watches Ghost Hunters or who you know, grew up watching In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy,
right,
that sees this shit.
Do you ever ask anything in regards to the witness being in any sort of liminal state, in other words, in between jobs or recently divorced or broke up with the boyfriend or girlfriend? Does any of that talk ever come up? I mean, do you actually go that deep as far as questioning them about what's going on in their life currently?
Yes.
Or even at the time of the sighting, I should say.
Well, and yes, I do. And the one thing that, and you haven't mentioned it, but I've, that type of thing is depression. Mm-hmm. I have interviewed a number of people who were clinical depression, mm-hmm, who've experienced things, and mm-hmm, you know, I plan to go further into researching that. I have not done it yet. Because just recently I was like, you know, crap, yeah, look at this case and this case and this case and this case. All of these people have told me that, you know, while I was depressed at the time, I was taking Zoloft or, you know, right, whatever the hell I take.
Huh. What about as far as people who, well, I should say, how prevalent is it that you come across people who've had experiences like this with these entities and you find out, either by accident or they directly tell you, that they've been poking around with some kind of what people would deem an occult practice or an occult subject. In other words, do you find that shit stinks when you stir it when looking at this stuff? Yeah.
At least a third.
Okay. Do you think that's got any real bearing on it, or do you think that is I don't know, paranoia of sorts? I mean, do you run into a lot of people who say, I mess with a Ouija board and then this happened, and immediately they're latching on to, that's what this is because I did this?
Well, again, about a third of the people I talk to have admitted to the Ouija board or, you know, some sort of occult practice. Oh, I just, you know, harmlessly bought a Wiccan spell book from, you know, some stupid Hallmark store and decided to start casting spells to make my, you know, tomatoes big, and, you know, weird stuff started happening. Yeah, they might just, well, it's with anything, you know. I mean, you know, why is my car acting up? You know, did I put in, you know, 40 weight instead of 30 weight? Is that the reason? You know, it's, I mean, there's you know, there's a correlation. I mean, it could be something that they're just attributing to whatever occult they're doing, or it could be actually happening. Personally, I've reported on so many Ouija board stories that you know, I think a lot of that's you know, pretty frightening. Personally,
well, I mean, when we're talking about a Ouija board, I know it's been at least 18 years ago where I studied the history of that and found out that locally where I am is actually where it originated for the States as far as a commercial venture, I guess you could say. And I talked to a lot of people and by all rights should write a freaking book. But one of the things that I came across time and time again was that even some of the people most closely involved in that story will tell you that that is nothing but a device to facilitate automatism, and many of them didn't think there was anything paranormal about it at all. I'm curious how you view the Ouija board. What do you view it as?
Well, the only time I ever viewed or I ever played with a Ouija board was in high school. I took a chick up to the cemetery. We played with a Ouija board because I really wanted to get laid.
Yeah. That's the way to go, you know.
Exactly. But it depends. I mean, logically looking at a Ouija board is, it's, put up by Milton Bradley. It's a piece of cardboard and it's got a plastic planchette. I mean, really, what is that? Is it a toy? They sell it as that, but I mean, so many people I've interviewed have had negative experiences, not just, necessarily negative, but downright terrifying experiences. I've interviewed a lot of people who are convinced that it's a doorway. You're trying to communicate with the spirit world, and what you communicate with is, not necessarily that nice. But why should it be stuck with a board? I've also talked with people who just will be sitting alone and start talking into the night, inviting something to come and talk to it, and that's happened too. So I don't necessarily think the board is evil. It's just a vehicle.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to people back then who, one woman that I interviewed, it was her mother. What I find most interesting about the Ouija is that one of the most common things I heard was people literally going insane from using it. And one lady I spoke to, her mother was actually locked away for being completely off her rocker because she became obsessed with it to the point where she was taking a bar of soap on top of a black marble table that they eat dinner at and making the numbers and letters and using a glass and literally doing it by herself. To which I later found out doing it by yourself is supposedly to be a hazardous, if you believe that, a hazardous operation to even operate it alone. But
so
I don't,
while drinking.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a curious thing. I'm not sure what I buy into that, but when we're talking about, inviting things in, or even as people say these days, being open to a certain thought or a certain theory on this stuff, and then something seems to present itself. I mean, do you look at that and go, that is some kind of response that is like a halfway between communication and or interaction with this stuff by just, I don't know if you want to say invoking it, but engaging it formally? Do you see that as being an open door to this stuff?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a possibility. It's a lot like the quantum theory, cat in the box.
Right. Exactly.
If you're viewing what's happening, you're interfering with it, and if you're viewing a Ouija board and interacting with it, you're interfering with something that you probably shouldn't interfere with.
Mm. Do you think? Yeah, I mean, do you think that means that we're more involved with this stuff than possibly that we think we are? I mean, by the standard definition of a ghost story, it's, I was walking along a path in the dark when suddenly, here this thing is. Do you think that there's probably likely in every story or most stories that you come across that there is a like somebody's kind of kicked open the door or is peeking where they shouldn't be? Or do you think that sometimes it is just complete happenstance that these events are witnessed by anyone?
The latter is in my opinion the most probable.
Really?
But
okay.
there are a lot of cases, I mean, that people have been talking about something, seeing a UFO or seeing a ghost, and all of a sudden it happens, mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they attribute it to that. In my opinion, most paranormal stuff, unless you are actively going out there, and prodding it with a stick, it's probably not going to show itself unless you're that serious about it. Most of it, in my opinion, is just total accident. I mean, where the hell are you going to see Bigfoot? Is Bigfoot going to, you're going to send him a letter?
Yeah.
A postcard? Yeah, not really. Ghost. I've been to, I don't know how many haunted places I've been to over the years. I mean, I've set places, you know, where somebody died, you know, over 100 years ago, you know, in a Victorian mansion, and her ghost is supposed to show up every night. I've sat in the very spot where she died, and just sat there in the dark, waited for her, you know, nothing happened. But I've been places to where, you know, I didn't expect things to happen, and they did. So, the paranormal things, I don't think people can go out and actually find them. That's what really pisses me off a lot of times about a lot of paranormal shows, is because they expect things to happen, and since they're on TV, things do happen. But
right.
You know,
well, they have to, or the ratings go down, right? You know.
Right. Yeah. You know, there was a episode of Monster Hunters with Bigfoot, and I interviewed the guy who was the quote unquote Bigfoot expert in that episode, and he told me that, you know, there was their big evidence was something splashing in the water, and they were like, "Oh, Bigfoot threw a rock at us," and he was like, "Jason, I sat there and watched, and a frog jumped off a log into the pond."
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, as I said, ratings are all the important issue for that. As far as shadow people go, when you talk about something being blacker than night, and I've heard that same description about a lot of other different phenomena, you know, so dark that it was darker than the blackest room you'd ever been in, that sort of thing. One would sure as hell think that there's got to be some decent video or photographic evidence out there for this. And is there? Do you know of any?
Well, I've been sent some. I don't believe any of it.
No?
I believe no video or photographic evidence.
Okay.
Whatsoever. I know people who are Photoshop experts. I know
sure.
people who, can do anything with video. So I don't believe any of that, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah. What about as far as any sort of audio? I know these things don't make a great deal of noise, and they're highly elusive, which, I mean, to me speaks volumes about what it is. But is there any kind of, like, I don't know if there's EVPs associated with shadow people or any of that sort of thing. Is there?
Not that I know of. I haven't heard of any EVPs associated with shadow people, but I lend a little bit more credence to EVPs because I've heard them. I've gone to places and put a recorder down and later listened to it, and I've heard, you know, a voice say, "I'm going to kill you." You know, I heard voices singing, you know, children's voices singing "Ring Around the Rosie." It was around an area where a bunch of kids died of cholera in the 1800s. I've heard a horse gallop in a place where people have reported seeing a ghost horse through a cemetery. Mm. So, I mean, that sort of stuff that I've actually experienced myself, I put some credence to. Other people, I wouldn't count on them, you know, agreeing with me because they weren't there when it happened.
Yeah. Well, you were talking earlier about sleep paralysis, and I think the one thing that I wanted to mention, and just in that line of thought, was there's a lot of people who wake up and can't move and are panicked because for whatever reason they can't move and they're awake and they're, you know, laying in a dark room. But did you find it interesting that the reports of people being surrounded by small beings or even something like you're talking about in regards to this large figure with glowing red eyes that almost seems to be inherently fearful by nature. Like there's no other way to take that as a human being. That seems to be a lesser known or lesser reported thing, and rather than just waking up and not being able to move, which seems fairly common. I mean,
absolutely. No, absolutely. The waking up and seeing something terrifying over their bed is just stuff I find out about because people know that I write about that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So they contact me. I mean, you know, people are waking up, you know, like Borat waking up and seeing Pamela Anderson over his bed, you know,
right, yeah.
I don't hear that stuff.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, here's one. This is from my own experience here that I'm curious if you've ever heard anything like this before. My granddad, my mom's dad, he became sick towards the end of his life. He developed Parkinson's disease, and he had to have a live-in nurse. And I remember that we weren't particularly all that thrilled about having anyone stay with him. We would rather him have come live with us. But he wanted to stay in his own home. That was very clear. There were, I would say, it was an extremely anti-structural situation. But we had a lady apply for the job, and a very sweet woman. And she took very good care of him for about a week and a half. And we went up one morning, as we usually did. I would get up, and mom would go to take me to school, and we'd stop by on the way out. And when we got there, she was packing her things. And we said, "What's going on?" And she said, "I'm leaving. I won't stay here another night." She said that she woke up in the middle of the night. The room was well lit from the being close to the living room with the living room light on. And she said that something was standing on her chest, and it was beating wings in her ears. In other words, slapping her on the sides of the head with wings. So the wings sounded as loud as you could possibly imagine them being, and she couldn't breathe. And she said at once, this thing pretty much lifted up off of her and seemed to exit through the ceiling. Now, I've heard of a lot of people mentioning things standing on their chest and that sort of, you know, suffocation mode of things. Have you ever heard about the wings beating in the ears?
Well, with the incubus and succubus, I mean, they're purported to have wings. Mm-hmm. But other than cases like that, no. I mean, in old hag syndrome, you nailed everything with that except for the wings.
Hmm. I mean, she swore that this was my grandmother, who had passed away some years before. Said, "Your grandmother, or your mother, rather, talking to my mom, does not want me staying in this house." And so, I mean, I look at what one of our former guests, George Hansen, has said about completely anti-structural situations where something is in such a utter state of change and upheaval, him having to be cared for, another woman in the house after there not being one there for years. It seemed to fit with something strange happening. This woman left. She did not come back. And, I mean, my mom offered to give her another half salary to stay because it was hell trying to find somebody. And she wouldn't stay. Now, none of the other people who ever stayed there with him and took care of him up until the point where he died ever had a problem. It was just her. And so I never have known what to make of that. I've heard of the incubus succubi thing, and I thought, is that what that is? But she was adamant that this was my Nana. But I was just curious if that ever,
I mean,
yeah.
Maybe she was just a bitch.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe
I don't know.
She was just a bad person.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe that's it. I don't know. But that kind of thing has always kind of puzzled me in terms of it sounds similar to other things, but the wings always just kind of made me wonder what that was about. So when you're talking about all this paranormal stuff wrapped up into one, what do you think that says about what is it? I mean, what I always say about what is this kind of thing suggesting to us? I mean, is it you had mentioned earlier that you didn't want to see your mom, and I know what you're talking. I know what you're saying, how it would scare you. And believe me, I don't disagree with you. But a friend of mine had said to me one time, well, if you did see your grandma or your grandpa or something like that walk into the room, what would that mean to you? I said, it would mean it would scare the shit out of me. And they said, but why would that do that? It's the same people that you knew. I said, yeah, but they're dead. That's the problem. They're dead.
Exactly.
But his answer to me was, wouldn't that prove life after death to you? And I guess it would in a way. Except for the fact that over the past couple of years, I've seen my wife in the house and she wasn't there. And I'm talking very pungent, you know, absolutely real looking apparitions of my wife. only she wasn't there. So I don't know that really conclusively proves life after death to me, but you know, if some relative of yours did walk into your living room right now, you would panic and run. How do you justify your fear over that other than the fact that they're passed away?
Well, one, I'd tell them just, I wouldn't panic and run. I'd just say, just leave me alone. Just leave me alone. The fear would just be because, you know, they're dead.
Yeah.
You know, they're dead, they're gone. I don't want to deal with them. The fact that, you know, this, again, going back, you know, the whole life after death thing, something I'm convinced is there. There is life after death.
Mm-hmm.
In what state it is, I'm not sure. I mean, who the hell knows? You got to have some faith with that, but I think all of the all the traditions around the world is, you know, there is life after death.
Yeah.
I just don't want it fucking with me.
And with that, Jeremy, I'll flip it back to you.
Well, Jason, let me ask you: you also deal with black-eyed children?
Yes. Well, no. Personally, no.
Well,
I don't want
research.
Them anywhere near me. Yes. My big rule in life is that I love the paranormal. I just don't want it. I just want it to happen to somebody else.
I'm confused as to what black-eyed children are supposed to represent. Evil? Is that what they are? Are they aliens? Are they demons? What are they? Are they actual children?
Well, all the above. I wrote an article for Nexus Magazine a little over a year ago about black-eyed kids, and I went over everything I could think of. You know, the whole spiritual alien. Ghosts, hoaxer, medical condition, drug addict type of thing. And the only terrestrial type of explanation was hoaxing. And because there are certain drugs you can take that can make your pupils blow up really big, but it doesn't turn your entire eye black. The same with medical conditions. There are certain medical conditions that can, you know, make your pupil really big, but, you know, your whites are still there. But black-eyed kids have the entire eye black. So, you know, I don't think there is a terrestrial explanation, but people I interviewed were either convinced that black-eyed kids are ghosts, demons, or
extraterrestrials. Please say vampires. Oh, extraterrestrials, damn it.
Yeah.
What's the MO on them? I mean, do they pop in and out of existence like a ghost? Do they harass people? What is exactly the thing?
Well, yeah, black-eyed kids basically. Let's go back to the beginning of the black-eyed kid craze. In 1998, a journalist in Texas named Brian Bethel, whom I interviewed, was going to pay his cable bill. He was, it was like 9:30 at night. He was at a strip mall in Arlington, Texas, and he was writing a checkout on his dashboard of his car, and he was going to put it in the night slot of the cable company. And he got a knock on the window of his car, and he looked up, and there were a couple of kids about 14 years old, and they motioned for him to roll down the window, and he rolled it down about an inch, and they're like, "Mister, you got to take us to our house. We need money to go watch this movie." And he felt compelled to open the door and let these kids in. The kids acted a lot more mature than they should have. They were about 14, 15 is, you know, what he could gather, wearing hoodies. And they had great diction, which he thought was really weird. And before he opened the door, he looked up and he saw that their eyes were completely black, which terrified the hell out of him. And he threw the car in reverse, and as he was leaving, he looked in the rearview mirror, and the kids were gone. Nobody was in the parking lot. This is pretty typical of a black-eyed kid encounter. They will come into your personal space, whether it be outside your car, they'll knock on the door of your house, they'll talk to you in public and try to get you to go someplace secluded. And you want to do this. You want to go with them. but you don't when you see their eyes. They usually dress out of date, 10, 20 years, and they smell bad.
So
that's basically the MO.
That's interesting then. So on the one hand, you're drawn to want to go with them or help them or whatever. But on the other hand, they sort of ruin it for themselves by flashing their black eyes, and then you get scared and you snap out of it. So what's the point of them even showing up?
They must just constantly
disappoint themselves and be like, oh, damn it, another one. Yeah. Shouldn't have shown the eyes, Harry.
No. Well, and they're usually never alone. There's usually at least two of them, and one of them plays the aggressor, and the other one is just kind of standing back.
But they're not showing their black eyes when they... Like, when they first got to the window, he didn't see that they were black-eyed kids, did he?
No, their eyes are usually normal until they, until you know, the last moment when the person's about ready to open the door, and it's like, holy shit, look at this.
So, I mean, I can't even think of how does that benefit the black-eyed kid in any way? Unless it's just a prank from, you know, a demon or something.
Well... I've gotten reports of these encounters from all across the U.S., from Canada to England and Australia and New Zealand. I mean, it's the same type of encounter all over the world.
I guess what I'm saying is, if they're evil, why do they let you off the hook? Why do they flash their eyes so that you will naturally become scared and run away, as opposed to letting them in to eat you or whatever they're going to do next?
Maybe they're not too smart.
I don't know. You'd think they'd have
really,
some practice.
Maybe it's
with
like,
this.
Okay, I'm about ready to eat, and now I'm going to eat, and oh, crap, they shut the door in my face.
Well, do you believe black-eyed kids? I mean, is there any of these threads, shadow people, black-eyed kids, ghosts, any of it? Is there any of it that you say, no, I don't buy that?
Well, yeah, black-eyed kids, I would say they were at one point on the I don't believe this list. But I've interviewed so many people who've experienced them to where, I think there's something to it. You've kind of put me on the spot about what I don't think's out there. And I'm pretty much open to anything. Not saying I believe or am convinced something's out there.
You can say mermaids.
Possibility of stuff.
You can still mermaids? Say mermaids.
Yeah. I've seen pictures. Some porn movie. Yeah, sorry.
Well, once again, if you do believe it all to some degree, then you're left with, you know, sort of two propositions. Either we've got a very much a larger ecosystem than we can normally pick up with our senses, and that ecosystem, the creatures within it, seem to share a lot of similar traits, or you've got the trickster theory of some sort, you know, however that pans out, either the good old-fashioned trickster theory, the devil made me do it theory, the whatever it is, you know, one intelligence acting as a bunch of things. I don't know. Neither of those are wholly appealing to me. I don't know about you.
Well, no, they're really not. I mean, the one thing appealing to me is, when you said the ecosystem, the only thing that would fit into our ecosystem to me are a few of the crypto creatures, lake monsters, Bigfoot. I can understand that. I can deal with this. I can deal that maybe something this big is wandering around and we haven't found it yet. Okay, I'll deal with that when we find it or not find it. You know, I can handle that as a terrestrial thing. Everything else is kind of is just kind of out there. I don't believe or disbelieve anything. I just think, you know, we don't understand.
Yeah, I guess by ecosystem, you know, maybe that's the wrong word to use, but I just sort of picture, you know, this other dimension that if you could shed some sort of light on it, you know, all of a sudden we would see that we are surrounded by other things than what we think we're surrounded by. You know, we'd get a little bit claustrophobic, maybe.
Well, I interviewed a guy a number of times out of Wisconsin who encountered something when he was a kid he called the Harlequin. He didn't call it that as a kid because he didn't know what to call it. but it was a androgynous clown-like entity that would appear in his room. It started when he was about 5 years old and lasted for like 2 years. It would just come through the wall in his room, and it wouldn't talk to him, but it would dance, and he would understand what it was saying through its dance. And throughout the years of him growing up, he would occasionally see it, walking along the road, in a bad wig, or knocking on the back door of a house, and he was too afraid to answer the door. And that thing went around for years until it contacted him and told him to meet him at a park. It didn't talk to him. He just knew in his head he had to meet it at this park, and he went. And this thing touched him, and all of a sudden he saw the world around him as he thought it actually was. And it's just scared him. It scared him to death, and he wanted absolutely nothing to do with this thing anymore, but he didn't have any choice. I mean, there were creatures inhabiting the world that he said that he really couldn't comprehend, and it really, really, really fucked him up.
Wow. So this thing showed him, you said, showed him what was in the environment that he wanted to see?
No, that it wanted him to see.
That it wanted him to see. Huh. And what did it give a reason, or did he interpret a reason from that?
Well, it had followed him his entire life, and this he felt was a culmination of all the experiences he'd had as a kid and as an adolescent and as an adult. It was just leading up to it showing him the world as he should see it.
Yeah, wow. And it scared him so much that he didn't want any part of the real world, huh? Maybe that's the message here. Maybe that's the lesson for today.
Yay.
Yay. Again, this is something from somebody I interviewed. Whether I believe this or not, or give it credence or not, he was pretty adamant that what he experienced was true.
Well, I find it interesting that the more I hear these types of stories, and the more I think about just the fact that even a ghost, I mean, as far as I know, there's no tale of feet being seen through the ceiling by one person, and the upper, the torso and head being seen by another person on another floor. You know what I mean? Like, the ghost is always there for the people to see, as it should be, as we would interpret a person being. These things are always sort of communicative in some way, or mostly, except for apparently shadow people. And if they're evil, they seem to foil their own evil plans. I mean, I don't understand. All I know is that the thing that seems to be at the center of this is some sort of contact with humans that seems to be nonsensical, but frightful at the same time. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around what the point is.
Why do we know what the point is? But it all sounds similar. Yeah, all these things sound similar. Who knows what the point is? I don't claim to know what the point
no,
is.
No, I know.
I'm a journalist. I'm not a ghost hunter. I'm not a paranormal investigator. I just write about paranormal stuff.
Boy, you're cranky. No, I'm just. I'm not asking you to know all the answers. I'm just saying, if it's not just there specifically for people to perceive, then why would a ghost not be halfway through the ceiling and halfway through, you know what I mean? Why would it always be on the level of a room in a house above the ground?
I've heard cases where that's not the case. I've heard cases where people will see somebody walking up a stairway that used to be in the house, and they will walk up through the floor and go up to the ceiling.
Yeah, but then does anyone on the next floor see them coming up through the floor? You know what I mean? Like, even that is something for you to see. Or it's just odd to me that so many things, like even that clown guy, can walk through a wall into a bedroom, but they're not walking in and out of random spots. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Like, there's no – if you were to build if you were to build a duplex on sacred ground, say – and somebody died on the ground, you might still see them on the second floor. You wouldn't see them just sort of in and out of a wall, between rooms, just random spots. It would always be something where you could easily pick them up and be like, you know, and identify what that is. I don't know.
Well, but that's just assuming that people who die at a certain point, when a building is at its certain point, you know, if it's only got one floor, the second floor was built later, that it would only be on the first floor. You know, ghosts are seen all over the place. I mean, specific ghosts, I mean, people have seen, you know, Frank James ghost in four different places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ghosts are not necessarily confined to a house or, you know, a state or some specific place. So, you know, I kind of see what you're saying about a ghost walking through a wall, but I don't think that should discount the fact that somebody saw the thing.
No, I don't think it discounts it at all. I'm saying I find it interesting that these things may feel random, but the way that they're set up for you to compute isn't random. I don't know. There's something in there. I'm not saying that it's not real. I'm saying it's interesting how we assume, I think, that, you know, there are these random ghost sightings, but they're not actually set up randomly. If they were set up randomly, you would be just as likely to see the thing, you know, walk vertically through the wall as actually through the wall. You know what I mean? Walk.
Okay, so are you saying that it's the Truman Show?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying. I don't have an answer either. I'm just saying I find all of this fascinating. But I also find it fascinating, my own take on it, which is the literal value of it is decreasing, but I don't see any theory that particularly speaks to it that I find wholly appealing. So I guess I'll just keep looking. Jason Offit.
Yes.
But I think you agree with me there.
Well, yeah, I do. I mean, the thing I'm kind of leaning on right now is I know something's there. I know something's going on with a number of different paranormal activity, but we're not going to find out what the hell it is. I'm that jaded. We're not going to find out.
Yeah, it could be.
So what do you do next,
Jason? What we're going to find out is if somebody shoots a crypto animal and throws it on the lab table, that's the only thing we're going to find out. Or if somebody can invent, you know, one of those things that Egon Spengler, you know, threw across the floor and sucked a ghost into, you know, in Ghostbusters. I mean, those are the only cases where we're going to actually be able to say, this is what this phenomena is.
So where do you go next, Jason, with what, you know, you've studied so far? And or do you go further into it, or do you kind of like table it here and say, I don't know what it is. I know something's recognizable. It's there, but I don't know where to go with it from here.
Well, again, as I said, I'm a journalist. When Jeremy said I got testy, I'm a storyteller. I'm going to keep interviewing people and finding out what they saw. But the people who are trying to figure it out, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell stories, and hopefully people will enjoy them.
Guess that's all you can do.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're going to freaking drive yourself crazy. And my chair squeaked again. You're going to drive yourself crazy, I mean, trying to figure out what all this stuff is. I mean, it doesn't matter if you are focused on the extraterrestrial phenomena, or if you're focused on ghosts or black-eyed kids or Bigfoot or whatever. There's always something out there that you're not going to be able to find out. You're not going to find out what the hell you're looking for anyway. So just have fun with it.
Well, there you go. Are you working on a new book? Anything in the pipeline?
Yeah, I'm working on a couple of books right now. One of them has absolutely nothing to do with the paranormal. I drove to Canada this summer, stopping at all the interesting, weird, and fun places I could find along the way, including Glenn Miller and Andy Williams' boyhood homes, and ate something in Canada called poutine.
Wait, is that my cue to ask what is poutine?
Yes, it was. That's why I paused. Yeah.
Go
that was
ahead.
Very uncomfortable. Yeah, it's French fries and cheese curds covered in brown gravy.
Oh, God. Well, that'll have you seeing ghosts.
By the way, it's delicious, and my stomach hurt for 2 days.
Nice. Very good. Is anything else?
I'm flirting around with a book on paranormal entities that appear human but are obviously not.
Hmm. You know, you said we can't know what this is, but I wonder if we could, through rigorous study, in some way come to an understanding of what it isn't. You think that's possible?
I think you need to go further with that question.
Do you, Jason Offit, think it's possible?
It's not where I was going. What it's not, no, but no, absolutely not. What it's not, what it is, the paranormal activity that I've experienced is not fudge. There. That's what it's not.
Well, there you go. On this we agree. Well, look at that.
It's something else. It's just not fudge.
Very good. It's something else. It's just not fudge. The Jason Offit story, soon to hit bookstores everywhere. Jason, give us your website one more time so people can look you up.
All right. I write a paranormal story every single week. It's at from-the-shadows.blogspot.com. And if anybody has anything they would like to talk to me about, it's at jasonoffit@hotmail.com. And just go to my website, and you can figure out how to spell out Offit.
Boy, you are in a good mood tonight.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Jason, thank you very much for chatting us up on all of this. And on short notice, and people don't know this, but he thought we were doing the interview tomorrow night, so he actually... got a surprise call and made the time anyway. So thank you for all of that.
Yes. Many
yeah,
thanks.
No problem. Hope everything went well.
Yes, I had a lot of fun. Thank you.
This is Mark Nesbitt. I wrote The Ghosts of Gettysburg. You are listening to Paratopia with Jeff and Jeremy.
So the Jeff and the Jason Morehouse.
Hello. So the Jer.
Is Jason Morehouse going to be joining us for the after chat?
I don't know. He might. He's texting with his girlfriend right now. So
oh, never mind.
Give him that leisurely.
You go text. Jeff and I will take this. Well, that was a wild ride.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. Yeah.
Clusterfuck is more like it, but I liked it. I thought it was fun. What do you think about, I don't know, I felt like I had a little epiphany there toward the end, which is just the fact that the way that these things are framed,
mm-hmm.
If ghosts are random, if these encounters are random, then why are they set up so that you can comprehend them comprehensibly, if that makes sense, so that they're comprehensible to you? If a ghost really does just walk through walls and go boogada boogada boo, why isn't it walking through and sticking in random things? The television, the wall, walking all the way through the length of the wall as opposed to through the wall to say hi.
Mm-hmm.
All any of that, you know, why is any of it set up so that you can visually grasp where it is and what's going on, and then the audio... If there is an audio component, then that sort of makes sense to you, too, and gives some sort of emotional value, usually of fear.
Right.
Why is that? Why is any of that the case if this is random?
Well, I mean, that supposes that it's random, number one. Number two, I think that unless you've got some kind of external, you know, perception device there, namely a camera or some sort of audio recorder running, that I don't know, I could say just as easily that it's not really there, that this is some kind of either environmental or outside stimulus that is tweaking the perception to actually see something that maybe isn't there. Maybe at times it is there, maybe at times that there's something for a camera to see, or something for a camera to record, or an audio to record. But you know, is it likely to me that in some cases that this is strictly a perceptual event. Yeah, I think that's probably pretty likely. But, you know, what I find really interesting is just a for instance, I mean, you've got a house, and I've actually down in the Eastern Shore, Maryland, there was a house that was very, very old. And on routine, people used to see a woman carrying a candle, you know, on her little, I don't know, the candle holder with the thumb grip on it like they used to have in the old days. And she used to come up to the stairs and make a right-hand turn and go into a bedroom, in which case most people would see her kind of envelope away. Either her form would shrink and kind of fold in on itself, or she'd just simply fade away before she even got near the door. Lots of reports of that. And that house was demolished. And not once, and I have asked, trust me, I have asked repeatedly in that area, since the house is demolished and it's a field now, do we see the old woman walking up the invisible stairs and then floating across the air on the invisible floor that was there? And so far, nope, not a one. And you would think that if this was some kind of residual thing that just replays itself over and over, we'd have ghosts floating up in imaginary buildings that aren't there, that used to be there, all the time. But I so rarely hear that or rarely come across it. That you got to think it's got something to do with being in that place, that it's got something to do with the environment that you're in, the house, the wood in the house, maybe the electrical charge in the house. All of those things could factor into that. I mean, when you were talking about that, I was kind of reminded of, not to bring up a sore subject, but ghost hunters. When they went to Tombstone, and I think it was the Birdcage that they investigated. And this was back when, as far as I'm concerned, they were a pretty decent show at one point. They were going up a stairwell into another room that also contained a stairwell that went down to the main bar, I think. And one of the reports was, we see a woman in a gown descending that staircase. And they got to the top of the stairs. And I mean, to this day, I've never seen an episode of that show where the both of them, quote unquote, look like they've seen a ghost. You could tell this was not acting, and if it was acting, then they deserve, you know, Emmys for it. They were genuinely blown away because they saw the back of this woman going down the steps and saw her very well. And the camera did not catch it, of course. But this is something that people downstairs have seen, upstairs, on the stairwell. I mean, it's been seen over and over and over and over. And so, again, but going back to your original thought, if they demolished the Birdcage tomorrow, would we see her walking up and down those imaginary stairs that no longer exist? By all rights, if it's a repetitive thing, and if it's like everyone talks about, the imprint on the fabric of time, it's a movie playing, it's residual, then by all rights, it should. Going off that theory, it should, but it doesn't. And I've not heard of anyone ever saying anything about seeing a spirit walking in a house that isn't there, in the air, you know, that sort of thing. You don't come across that. And I find that curious.
The other thing, as I'm thinking about it now, I wish there were some sort of data on, comparing how many people who have seen a UFO that have said, when I paid attention to it, it started paying attention back.
You haven't heard that?
No, I have heard that. I'm saying see some data comparing that to the same thing with ghosts. When I acknowledge the ghost acknowledged me. You know, does it work out to be the same, on average, the same? How many of these things can happen on all of these different paranormal levels that seem to be random flybys or seem to be random hauntings and things like that? Yeah. And then it's, you know, when you really think about it, when you really just think about what you're seeing and how you're interacting with it, that can't be true.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't see it as random. I'm with you. I don't see you just happening upon that sort of thing. And Gettysburg to me is a great example of that. I mean, I find it really interesting, particularly that video that we've talked about before on the show of I think it was a couple. So Jason, was that West Virginia that they were from, or Virginia, or somewhere in there?
Yeah, something like that.
You know, they're aiming this camera at the Apache Woods in Triangle Field, and you know, you've got soldiers that seem to be literally repeating themselves going up this hill and making hard right turns and all that, and it extraordinarily clear. And I'm not sure if they saw something initially for that to be there, or whether or not that was just playing. Would that have been playing if they weren't aiming a camera? If they weren't there at all, would it have been there? I don't know. I mean, as far as I know, to this date, no one else has ever seen anything like that, or rather recorded something like that in that spot. And Jason and I have been there. We've found that spot. We know where that is. And what's interesting is what I think we're going to be going down there in a few weeks. And I think one of the things I want to find out, for those who don't know and don't live in the area, the whole battlefield's recently been torn apart 6 ways from Sunday and remade into exactly the way it looked when the battle happened. And so, you know, when we all took our trip down there and we went to Triangle Field, it doesn't look like that anymore. It looks the way it did when the battle happened. So you're talking about a lot of trees being felled, a lot of land being moved. God, I mean, just all sorts of stuff. And you would think if there was ever going to be a time for an anti-structural event to be happening or for a manifestation to happen because of that, it would have been then. And I'm curious. I mean, we asked Mark when we went down there, you and I, Jeremy, if anything like that was happening. And he said, not as far as he knew, but reports come in slowly. And so we don't know.
Jason, do you share a similar take on all of this? You've hunted down the ghosts. Or do you think that they really are sort of recordings, maybe trapped in time somehow?
I had a story for Jeff. I told him back when my grandmother passed away in 2005, where I was actually looking after her house and everything after she had passed away, taking care of her affairs and everything. And I told Jeff that for about 3 or 4 days in a row, I had seen my grandmother get up out of her bedroom, because I was actually sleeping in the guest room, and get up out of her bedroom, pass me in the hallway, go through the living room and out into the kitchen, which was a routine she did every day. I saw her for 3 to 4 days straight doing this, and my grandmother had passed away 2 weeks earlier. Now, the first time I saw it, it creeped me out, of course, but then when I saw the same thing playing over and over again, I talked to Jeff about it, and we talked about the residual hauntings and stuff like that, but which you guys talked about tonight, if the house is demolished, do you see just random spirits walking up in midair, which would scare the shit out of anybody driving down the road. So,
yeah.
But it's a whole new slant on things. And, but I've witnessed it personally, seeing the same apparition over and over again. And,
so you don't necessarily think that was her. I mean, do you think that if you, when you told me this, it's like you didn't engage it at all.
Right.
So do you think you could have? I mean, this is an impossible question to answer, but I mean.
Right. At the time, the only thing going through my mind was, holy shit, there's my grandmother.
Right.
And not one word could come to my mouth.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just one of those impossible questions. I mean, what do you, to do that in that situation? I mean, you've got to have the presence of mind to do it, number one, but which is tough. But I don't know. I mean, residual versus intelligent. I mean, I don't know. I don't even know how you would tell the difference unless it actually talked to you. And again, you don't get many cases of people having this literal conversation. That seems like a rare thing. It seems to me that seems like a rare thing. I remember hearing about a bed and breakfast that was somewhere near Gettysburg where a woman like sat up half the night talking to these two gentlemen in her room. And she said, oh, they were clearly from the Civil War. You had a conversation. What did you talk about?
Right.
You know, but you never get that part of the story about what was discussed. And then you got a question, of course, you know, is this woman okay? Is she of sound mind? I mean, right. Not that to be a paranormal guy and go, oh, she might have been crazy. That's something you have to consider. But I don't know. I mean,
and here's another question. I mean, do ghosts ever go through each other? Do ghosts ever appear from different time periods at the same instance?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if these things are just, again, random or even random to to Gettysburg, other people have died in Gettysburg since since the war, right?
Right.
Do they ever show up in along with the Civil War people?
Well, I know that there's you hear tell every now and then. I mean, the thing about Gettysburg you can think about is guys dying in split seconds, being liquefied, I mean, by cannonballs coming down a hill or what have you. I mean, just the shock and suddenness of it. And then the magnitude of the amount of people is the other half of it. I think that I could definitely see, I don't know, you put yourself in that situation and you say, I'm running up this hill 1 minute and the next minute I'm liquefied. And so I question the old thing that you always hear people talk about, they don't know they're dead. And on some level, to me, that like that suddenness of that seems almost to make sense to me. But is that true or not? Who in the fuck knows?
Right.
You know, when you're talking about more recent spirits in Gettysburg, there was I know that I've had people tell me in Gettysburg when you and I have gone that they've seen the girl on the
observation tower.
Yeah. And this is a girl, what, in the 1970s or 80s?
Yeah, it was a girl from Maryland. She went up there. She wrote a 3 or 4 page letter and
killed herself.
Jumping off the observation tower.
Yeah, and killed herself. And then she has been seen there. So there's that. I mean, is it the suddenness? Is it the way you die?
Well, if you don't know you're dead, what does that mean? Does that mean that your consciousness, who you believe you are right now, is forever trapped in those 10 seconds of going up that hill and dying, going up that hill and dying, going up that hill and dying?
Yeah, I mean, who knows?
Groundhog Day? I mean, is that
Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah, that's nice. I don't know. I mean, is it that or is it that you I mean, what is the ghost perception? That's always been the question I've wanted to ask. You know, I mean, that was something that back when I was working in the guitar shop at the inn that was from the 1700s, that I always said, if I ever see a ghost and it looks at me and I know it's looking at me, I'm just going to say, where are you? Because that seems like the pertinent question to ask. Where are you? I'm in my living room. Where are you? I mean,
right.
And there's, you know, again, ghost hunters got that EVP one time, which if you're going to fake something, this is too dumb to make up. In my opinion, you know, the hotel where the princess had her bed, she stayed there, she lived there, she died there. And they say, are you here? And you hear very faintly, well, of course I'm here. Where are you? And that, to me, is one of the biggest things and we've heard this kind of thing before. You've heard tell of people saying, you know, they're going through their duties or they're doing the things that they did in life, and this is what they continue to do. Is it that we're seeing a ghost of somebody who is dead, or are we seeing back in time? Is that what this is? And the answer is, we don't fucking know.
And good Lord, God knows what they think of us. I mean,
if they can see us.
Right.
You know? I mean, that's the other question is, back then, you know, we should have had, you know, reports of, and there are, from what Mark had told us, I think at one time, there are reports of certain soldiers from certain battles seeing soldiers from, like, the Revolutionary War or something like that. I mean, that happens. My Aunt Mary, who recently came to visit from Colorado, she went to Normandy. And I think, Jeremy, you had mentioned, like, the beaches of Normandy, like, are they haunted and that sort of thing? And I asked her about that, and she goes, oh, you would be shocked at what, you know, if there was any place that was going to be haunted, this place would be inevitably haunted. And I think she said something like that the townspeople every once in a while will talk about seeing German soldiers on the beach, and we'll talk about seeing men running from the beach and disappearing, that sort of thing. So yeah, it happens in all these different things. you have to wonder about like the jungles of Vietnam. I mean, so many guys died there. What was that like? Is that place haunted? And if so, you know, are the Vietnamese people seeing this sort of thing? This is where I think somebody needs to go to, you know, another country and live there for a year and just collect reports of what are people seeing. Don't guide them in any way possible. Don't suggest anything. I'm here doing research. What kind of spirits do you see here? And see what they tell you. You know, I saw a serviceman walking up the beach, or I saw a Nazi German soldier behind the, you know, behind the pillbox or something like that. You wonder what it is that people are actually seeing. Are you seeing this spirit? And if so, what is that spirit doing? What is their perception? Are they not even seeing you, but they're seeing what they saw in life? You know, is that how it works? I mean,
well, can we
unanswerable?
Well, yeah, all this stuff is unanswerable, but can we at least pull the curtain back on this bit of magic?
Mm-hmm.
When someone sees a black-eyed kid or whatever, has some sort of encounter with anything,
mm-hmm.
that they feel that their lives or their very souls are in danger, and they feel like, wow, I was terrified, I'm glad I got out of that. But the way they got out of that was that the entity itself tipped them off. And can we say that that was, they were never in any danger to begin with?
Mm.
And that that's a ruse for whatever reason? I think that's a fair assumption. I don't understand how, I don't know if there are specific black-eyed children researchers, but if there are, have they put this together that, well, okay, they flash their eyes and then the person's out of there. So nobody's ever actually gone with a black-eyed kid.
Yeah.
These kids must be starving.
Well, I mean, you're talking to a guy who thinks that the black eyed kid thing is not anything at all. But, I mean, let me just point one thing out that I find that's really interesting about the whole black eyed kid thing. 1998, I think, is when Jason said that that kind of thing started being reported or prevalent. That's the same year silicone hydrogels became available in the way of contact lenses. And that essentially, like, for the reasons that people didn't – like these days, getting red contact lenses is like you can get them offline. It's no problem. And most of the times those are silicon hydrogels. And the reason that you have those is because the old type of lenses being used for any kind of decorative purpose or, you know, fashion purpose – they held in, they didn't breathe. And so when they don't breathe, they infect your eye. And so no company is going to make some kind of contact lens that's strictly for the visual appearance of something that could potentially poison your eye into an infective state. Silicone hydrogels have like a high oxygen permeability of the silicone. And so therefore, they're less wettable, but they breathe more, which means you don't get infection. And so the silicone hydrogels are what made all of these fashionable contact lenses, the blacks, the cat eyes, everybody's seen those, the ice blues. Your friend has
Twilight
contact lenses.
Still, you know, a friend of yours, is he?
Yeah. She, yes. And they're incredibly comfortable. They can be dry, but in the long term of things, they don't cause a lot of optical problems in that sense. So I think that's probably where a lot of that came from. And let's not forget that 1998 is the year Mechanical Animals came out from Marilyn Manson. A huge hit, debuted at number one, its first week of sale. You know, The Dope Show, Rock Is Dead, I Don't Like Drugs, The Drugs Like Me, Coma White, all these songs, that came out. And so Marilyn was hitting his big stride and probably influence a lot of people in the way of these optical, you know, just for shock effect contact lenses. So,
and assless chaps, by the way, picking up where Prince left off.
And breasts. and non-existent genitalia. So there's that. And when you think about the age group that most of these people talk about, you're talking about, you know, almost these – God, what was that movie where – a woman was being haunted, and she not haunted. Remember what was the movie with Alanis Morissette as God? I forget what that was called.
Dogma.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
The hockey kids, like that's like the hockey kids are like the black eyed kids to me, you know, like the hockey kids. You know, the age that you get with these is like almost who you think would be attracted to that kind of gothic Marilyn Manson type stuff. And so with all of that availability of those things, that's what I kind of chalk up the Black Eyed Kids to. I don't see anything to that. But is anything scaring you deliberately? If that's the purpose, is to scare you or ward you off, then what's the, what, again, what, like you say, what's behind the curtain? I think the surface level would be they're feeding off the very fact that you're afraid, so they're feeding off your fear. Actually, that's the easy answer.
That's
you know?
An easy answer, but I think there's another easy answer, which is George Hansen's, which is
yes,
it scares you off because the other side effect is anti-structure in your life.
Exactly, yeah.
So it's actually a necessary evil.
Yeah, it's part of it. Yeah, I mean that's the whole thing. I mean, if you're terrified of it immediately, it's well, I mean, number one, it for it to be inherently fearful from the get-go, which to me, I mean, UFOs are inherently a fearful thing. And for some people they're not. Some people just think that's amazing to be able to see something like that. I'm like, yeah, it's amazing as provided it keeps its distance. The minute I start seeing a silhouette of something solid, I'm ready to get the hell out of there. But at the same time, it is the anti-structure. It is the chaos of that. And it's and again, it goes back to what I've said. The notion that you've got this toehold on reality and you know what's what. That's the kind of experience that just destroys that. It destroys what you know.
But you know what? If George Hansen is right, then why doesn't plutonium have the same effect? Because plutonium, if you get too close to it, will kill you.
Right.
What could be worse than that? So why doesn't it have a bunch of ghosts and shit warding you off so that you don't come into the anti-structure that is plutonium?
Why not plutonium?
You know, you get what I'm saying. I mean, why not anything that's that harmful to your health that it will kill you quickly or slowly?
McDonald's cheeseburgers, Jason says. Yes.
Yes.
The plutonium of the food world.
Although that has a clown warning you off.
I don't know. The thing is, I don't know. That kind of seems a separate thing to me. I don't know why that seems a separate thing. Is it warding you off? I mean, that's the warding you off of something doesn't seem like what the majority of this stuff is doing. It's not warding you off of anything or warning you of impending doom or it comes with it. I mean, any harmful thing on the planet, and there's plenty of freaking harmful things on the planet. If that was the case, then all those things would be rife with paranormal activity, and it's not. I don't think plutonium is necessarily an anti-structural element in the sense that it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do, whereas anti-structure is the exact opposite of what routine is. So I don't know. But most of this stuff, I mean, I don't see it as like seeing a ghost and being afraid of it, or if you believe in that sort of thing, black-eyed kids knocking at your door. You know, you can look at that stuff as like an omen. Or a harbinger like Mothman, which is something I don't talk about very much, but you know, Mothman to me, just the general story seemed like a harbinger or an omen of the collapse of the Silver Bridge. And so I got to be honest, you know, when the O'Hare sighting happened. And I had no idea whether that was a manifestative thing or whether that belonged to us or, you know, a secret project or whether it was possibly some kind of weather thing, which I don't buy, but people have suggested that. You know, I was looking at O'Hare real hard for a long while after that sighting happened. Like, is there going to be something bad happen there? Is there going to be a plane crash? Is there going to be I don't know, some other kind of horrible catastrophe that could happen as a result of this object being there and being a mystery. You know, like, that's what it is. But no, nothing ever happened at O'Hare, so far as I know. Nothing really horrifying happened. So I don't know what to make of that. But who's to say that everything that's paranormal is a harbinger of something to come or something like that? We only know, or we think we know, what surrounds the event and what makes this thing happen. Is there a purpose to it? Well, why? It's not a productive question. So there you go.
Perhaps on that note of George Hansen imitation.
I love you, George. Come on the show.
He's coming on the show. He said just give him another month.
Okay.
He's giving lectures and writing papers and all that, but he'll be back in about a month, folks.
Excellent.
All right, Jeff, Jason Morehouse, good to talk to both of you.
You too.
Now let's get the hell out of here and get ready for Paratopia Live this Sunday.
That's right, Sunday night at 10 p.m. 9 p.m.
What were you saying?
I was saying 10. Isn't it 10?
No.
Is it 9?
9 p.m. this show of ours.
Oh, that's right, 9 p.m. Wow, I'd have been a little late.
Yeah. 9 p.m., everyone.
And during that show, just as a little teaser, we'll be discussing Stephen Hawking's idea that the universe just popped into existence for no reason.
Yes, Jeff is very upset about this. He won't stop bitching about it. He's writing Stephen Hawking a very sternly worded Braille letter as we speak. Is that his problem? Is he blind?
See?
I can't remember what his problem is.
Wow.
He's spelling him a sternly worded letter right now.
No, I'm not. 1-801-251-1045 is the call-in. And come on, people, call in and let us know what you think. So get your thoughts ready for that.
Yeah, don't call now. Call on Sunday.
And if you haven't seen Curiosity, which is on the Science Channel, it may run again before the weekend gets here, at least. And so you may get an opportunity to see that. And I encourage you, after they run that show, they also did a discussion on a panel discussion of someone that we're going to try and get on the show soon. So check out that after chat that they did on Stephen Hawking's episode of Curiosity, which is really good. And ultimately, I don't know, really arrogant. Join us, won't you?
It's the gold standard of the Science Channel.
Right, that's it.
Yeah. Good night, everybody.
Good night.